The hour of recess having ended, the Senate shall come to order. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will do the order. Would you see if there are messages from the House? If there are, would you please have those read?
There are announcements. Secretary, please read messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed Senate Bill 450, Emergency Clause Adopted. Also, House Bill 1073, an act relating to the Missouri Grain Dealer Law. Also, House Bill 1096, an act relating to county health centers. Also, House Bill 1190, an act relating to police records. Also, House Bill 1231, an act relating to state purchasing, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will do the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Please send the report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report when it arrives at the dais.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill 450, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been duly enrolled and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
All other business will be suspended, and Senate Bill number 450, having passed both branches of the General Assembly, will be read at length by the Secretary, and if no objections are made, the bill will be signed to the end that it may become law. Secretary, please read the bill.
Truly agreed to and finally passed, Senate Bill 450, an act relating to school districts and urban districts with an emergency clause.
No objections being made, the bill is so signed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business. Senate bills for perfection, the formal calendar.
Senate bills for perfection, formal calendar. Senate Bill 811, Senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 811 be brought before the body.
Heard the motion of the Senator from Green. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Green.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a very simple bill. First of all, I move for the perfection of Senate Bill 811. This is a very simple bill. Missouri State University has requested approval to grant a temporary easement for the city of Springfield to improve an intersection at National and Monroe Street, and that is all this bill does. And we have to have a bill because of the action we took last year that we're trying to correct in another bill where they have to bring everything to us on leases and sales and all of that. And so that is the purpose for us bringing this.
Senator from Green has moved that Senate Bill 811 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from Cape, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the senator from Green.
Senator, you yield. He yields. Senator, you may proceed.
I do. Thank you for yielding, Senator. I apologize I wasn't in the chamber when you did your explanation. I thought we were going to go back to the informal calendar. What are we doing here?
This is just it's real simple. It just allows Missouri State University to grant a temporary easement for the city of Springfield to improve an intersection at National and Monroe Street in Springfield.
Okay, so a land conveyance from the Missouri State University Board of Governors to the city of Springfield.
Temporary easement.
Temporary easement, land conveyance, yeah. Okay, all right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
We're on the motion of the Senator from Green. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize the close.
I close, Mr. President.
Senator from Green moves that Senate Bill 811 be declared perfected and ordered printed. All in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. We stand on that. Next up is Senate Bill 599. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 599 be brought before the body for perfection.
Heard the motion, Senator from Boone. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 599 be ordered perfected and finally printed. All this does, this bill requires public school districts in their annual accountability report card, which they already submit to the state, to simply say whether or not the school district currently has a state-approved gifted education program and the percentage and number of students who are currently being served in that program. Doesn't cause them to have a program or anything else, just simply report if they have a program and how many kids are served by that program.
Senator, you've heard the motion. Senator from Boone, does any senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the first, for purposes of seeking recognition.
Thank you, Mr. President. Can I inquire the senator from Boone? Could I inquire the senator from Boone?
Senator from Boone, you yield. I apologize. There was a little bit of conversation going on.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator. Just a quick question. Was there anybody testifying in favor or against the legislation?
I believe, yeah, we had several people testify in favor, nobody against.
Okay. Was there a fiscal note as far as the department?
Nope, zero.
Okay, so the districts don't anticipate that this mandate will put a burden on them as far as cost, local cost?
Nope.
No, okay. All right.
Yeah, and remember, they already, under state law, have to submit an annual report card that lists a lot of stuff. This just says, hey, in there, say whether or not you have a gifted program, and if you do, how many kids are in it.
Okay.
And so it's minimal.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the Senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Question. On the gifted, what brought this to your attention, I guess? I mean, is there some...
Well, because I think we've got some data from years ago when actually in the formula where we used to have money in there for gifted, which we don't have in the formula anymore, we had a better idea at the state level of who had a gifted program and how many kids in the state were identified as gifted and served, and we just don't have that anymore. So literally there's no data. This is just an attempt to figure out who's got a gifted program and how many kids are being served.
And why? I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult. Why is that important, I guess?
So I think that we can look and see where districts are spending resources and whether or not, you know, they've got populations that are or aren't served.
But I guess it's the local school district's decision to have a gifted program or not, correct?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. So I'm just curious as to why it matters to DESE to have the information about what those districts...
I think it's relevant to DESE. I think it's relevant to us as legislators to know anytime you've got a population that can be separated out. And that goes for kids at one end of the spectrum who are in the gifted end, as well as kids on the other end who need special services, because we certainly have a lot of reporting requirements in this state for every aspect of kids at one end of the spectrum, but we don't have a lot for kids at the other end of the spectrum. So this is simply to say who has a program and how many kids. Zero fiscal note, Senator.
No, I know. I'm just trying to understand. Why, though? What do they do with the information?
Because I think this type of data is always helpful, and it's never harmful to have too much data on what our kids are doing in school, what populations we have, and what's being spent on.
Well, okay, so let's assume that we get the data. We know that 70% of school districts have a gifted program, 30% don't. What purpose does that serve?
I think we can do with that data whatever we want.
And that's what I'm getting at. What does that mean?
I don't think there's any huge end conspiracy here, Senator. I think
I'm
it's just
not implying a conspiracy.
I think it's just to get the data and find out if we got gifted kids that are being served or not served.
I try to look a couple steps down the road, and I'm just trying to understand why we are embarking upon the first step. Because sometimes you embark on the first step, you're on your way to the third step, and then you say, well, listen, we're already one step down the path, let's keep going. And I'm not implying a conspiracy. I just want to know, what is it we're gathering the information for? Is it just to put on a website, Or is it to...
Sure, because remember, we have kids all over the state who are identified as gifted. We have gifted parent associations at school districts all over the state, and it's information that those associations and those parents like to have. They like to know, okay, my kid has been identified as X. Are there other kids in the state like this? What resources are being spent on this? I think it's just informational purposes. I think in the era of transparency, Senator, I don't think you can frankly ever have too much information, and I think it's not onerous by any means to ask them to just say how many kids they've got, whether they've got a program, and I think that it's valuable information for those parents that want to know that.
When we have the gifted lobby day, what is that for? What are they generally lobbying for?
Just lobbying to make sure that as legislators we're aware that their kids have been identified as being part of a certain population and that they exist and that we're mindful of that.
Do we fund? I mean, is there any state appropriation for?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from the first, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could get unanimous consent, I'd like to introduce some very special guests that are with us today.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my left, and your right, Mr. President, sitting on the bench over here, we have two students from the first district. They're in the Capitol today to receive the Missouri Youth Adult Alliance Awards. They are Lucy Vogt and Mick Ebert. And they were nominated by their teachers for their outstanding leadership in substance abuse prevention at the Lindbergh School District, which is in the first district. They're accompanied today by their mothers. And if they would stand, Maggie Vogt and Vicki Ebert. And I'd like the body and Mr. President to make them feel welcome today.
That's great. Let's welcome and congratulate the guests of the Center for the First. Keep up the good work. Further discussion. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
I close, Mr. President.
The Senator from Boone renews his motion that Senate Bill number 599 be perfected and order printed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and order printed. Staying on that same calendar, Senate Bill 482, Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill 482 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill 482 be declared perfected and ordered printed. This just makes a one-word change. It changes the application for research funds for Alzheimer's disease from $30,000 to $50,000. I think it's important for the body to know that the Missouri has had a tremendous impact with this is a beginning research projects, but we've had some of these projects that started at $30,000 to multiply into multiple tens of millions of dollars. And Missouri has been a leader in research on Alzheimer's, which is one of the most devastating diseases creates considerable cost to our society. We realize that there's no money for this, but at the point in time when it can be funded, we would like to have this recognized as $50,000. Glad to answer any questions, Mr. President.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from Saline moves the Senate Bill 482 be declared perfected and order printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and order printed. Staying on that same calendar, Senate Bill 595, the senator from the 8th.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 585 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 8th.
President, I now move that the committee substitute be adopted. I have a Senate substitute. It has been distributed. I ask for a waiver of the reading.
Send the Senate substitute forward. Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, it has been distributed, you say?
Yes.
It has been distributed. Okay.
freshly distributed. Should be on their desks as we speak.
Senator moves the adoption of the Senate substitute. Would you care to explain the Senate substitute?
I would, Mr. President. Mr. President, over the summer I was approached by a parent of a special needs child in the school district saying that the process that special needs children get a hearing for when they object to what the school district is doing with their children, they didn't like that process. So I filed a bill earlier this year that would basically say if you were an employee of the school district, you weren't able to sit on this panel. The school district and the came to us and we sat down as a group, and we've come up with a better way of doing the process. We're eliminating the due process three-person panel and going to an administrative hearing process. The substitute came about because when we talked to the administrative hearing commission, they said, hey, we want to start the training sooner than later, so they asked us for an emergency clause, so that's what's in the substitute, as well as we had to set up a fund so that we could take the money from the IDEA to administer the training. And we also put some restrictions on the Administrative Hearing Commission to make sure that they couldn't be an employee of the school district or have served as an attorney for the parents as well. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
You've heard the motion from the senator. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from St. Francis, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Quar, the senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
I was going to follow this again. We're having problems when we're trying to get somebody to say their special education, or what was the technical term here?
Say that again.
What are we trying to correct? You said you got with people and you were trying to...
Sure. What we're having problems with is the when a special needs child is getting services from a school district, the parent potentially doesn't like what the school district says they're going to do, the services they're going to give, and they object to that. So they go through a due process hearing. And currently there's a panel of three referees that are appointed. The parents can throw out a referee, the school district can throw out a referee, but they get three referees. What often happens is one of these referees could be an administrator or deal with special needs kids at another school. They can be serving on one panel, and then that school have somebody serving on another panel, and it's just too much crossover.
Uh-huh.
And there could be some situations where, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and services are not rendered that should be rendered. Parents are afraid of that happening, so they want a non-biased way of trying to get a resolution to their concerns.
But we're setting up a completely new setup then?
We're going under the Administrative Hearing Commission.
And that's already something that's...
It's already a process. They currently don't do special needs concerns, so that we're going to have to set up a training program for these hearing officers.
Okay, well, there's only one thing, and somebody brought this to me, but Administrative Hearing Commissions has the ability to do summary judgments in all their other things. And you've put in here on page 6 that they can't do a summary judgment. So if somebody comes back to them time and time and time and time again, they can't just have a summary judgment. They have to go through the expense and the time of having a complete hearing.
Right. The parents don't want a summary judgment. They want.
I can appreciate your parents not wanting that.
I understand where you're coming from.
From the state standpoint, the cost of doing that for somebody that's asked for this appeal 10 times is costly. And I don't have a problem with your bill. I just have a problem. I think these people do a pretty good job when they decide that, you know, this one, we're just going to do a summary judgment because we've heard it before, and we don't want to go through the expense.
I understand where you're coming from. I'm walking a fine line on this bill. It's a compromise.
Well, there's another person wanting to inquire of you, but I'll tell you, I'm going to probably have a little amendment to say that if they can have it like in all their other areas, they can have a summary judgment in this area also. And I appreciate your parents don't want them to have that, but I wouldn't want it either. But from the state standpoint, we have to have something if somebody is coming to them time and time and time again to avoid the expense of that. And so I'll have that before you close. And I know that I think the senator from the 10th has some questions. Let me see if I can get this done. I've got something that may be it, but go ahead.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from the 10th, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thanks, Senator. I appreciate you bringing this issue forward. I wasn't aware of your bill, but I actually, this is one of the areas where we spend quite a time, amount of time in our pro bono practice at my law firm is representing families and guardians in special education issues. And, you know, one of the things, frankly, Senator, that we try to do in our practice is prevent due process from ever having to take place. Because as you may be aware now that you've gotten to know these families, once it hits the due process level, everything's broken down between the school and the parents. And, I mean, you, obviously, if you're going to go that far and you're going to start hiring lawyers and that sort of thing, you've got a problem. And some of these things go on for years and years and years. And the kids, unfortunately, are not getting the education that they need while this is getting drug out. So what my first question for you is, it sounds to me like you have gotten to a point where the teachers, I'm not the teachers, the schools and the parents agree on this. Is that true?
Right. Both sides, I would say, agree, but are not overwhelmed with this is a great, I mean, this is a good step forward. They both okay. have things that they probably don't like in here. We've walked a very fine okay. line trying to get everybody on board to get something changed this year.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate that because I just the fact that you've got them even in a tentative agreement is nearly impossible when it comes to special education issues. So kudos to you on that because it's almost impossible. The second question I have is it's my understanding that the Administrative Hearing Commission is basically here in Jefferson City. Are they going to be willing to travel to the location
they
of the school district?
They are willing to do that. And the funding is not, there's no fiscal impact to the state of Missouri. It's going to be all through the IDEA funds. So, yes, they're willing to do it. They've seen the bill. And they, like I said in my opening, they came back and said, hey, we would like an emergency clause so we can start the training immediately upon the signature of the bill.
Okay, and so they're willing to go to, so there's not going to be an extra expense for the schools or the parents to have to come down to Jefferson City for that. Right now, when the panel convenes, when it's over, if one side is not happy with what the current panel comes up with, they then can file suit in federal court. I'm assuming that both sides will still have the ability to bring suit in federal court if they're not happy with the results of the Administrative Hearing Commission. Is that correct?
It's my understanding that we're not changing that at all. We're just changing from a due process, three-panel member to the Administrative Hearing Commission.
And to go to what the Senator from St. Francis was talking about, it's my understanding that right now, if a parent is unhappy with what the panel does and they go ahead and file in federal court and they lose or win there, that as the next school year comes along, they can go ahead and file due process again anyway. So in essence, there's no summary judgment available currently. Is that correct? A parent can file every year for due process. Is that correct?
Yes, I would believe that is correct.
Okay.
As you may be an expert on this area, I am trying to take care of constituents' concerns, so I'm not an attorney that represents these. So, please.
No, I understand. I have to tell you, these cases become black holes very quickly. And I think that the parents and the schools are frankly both at fault with the way that these things go. Because I think you have parents, first of all, who want Cadillac educations for their kids, rightfully so, but federal law says you only get a Chevy. That's what federal law says. You get a free and appropriate public education. You don't get a Cadillac. You don't get all the best. You get a free and appropriate public education. And so I think that you've got some parents who are being unreasonable on some issues. On the flip side, you've got schools who are going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that they don't have to spend any more money than they want to on these issues. And I don't blame them for that either. They obviously are strapped for cash, and this is a difficult thing. But it's my understanding, because we're going to be talking about this amendment here from the Center from St. Francois in just a minute, that right now there's nothing that would prevent parents from filing over and over and over again. And that's your understanding as well, correct?
That is mine. Yes.
Okay, and so I guess the concern that I'm going to have, and I'm going to have to talk to someone offline if that amendment is offered, is whether or not how this will substantially change the way these are handled now, because I don't want to get into a situation where parents file for due process and then they have a summary judgment motion and they're thrown out of the Administrative Hearing Commission, and then are they automatically having to pay for the expense of a federal lawsuit. I don't want them to have to go down that road. And then, frankly, on the flip side, I don't want schools to have to pay automatically for a federal court, you know, especially if the parents are able to find someone to handle their case for them pro bono. And then you've got the schools having to fight all of this out in federal court instead of in the Administrative Hearing Commission. So I just wanted to get those things kind of out of the way with you, and I suspect I'll just now wait and see if the senator from St. Francois has an amendment. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator from Livingston, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would seek unanimous consent to introduce some guests.
The senator from Nottoway is asking for unanimous consent to introduce some guests. Seeing no objection, Senator from Atchison, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think it's fitting that today, as you're in the chair, and they've sent a group of county coroners to watch over the Senate. Off to my left and your right, up in the upper gallery, county coroners from throughout the state here watching the Senate operate. And at some point, we'll probably have to come down and check on a few of you folks. If my colleagues would please join me in welcoming these great people. Their state government.
With the guests of the Senator from Grundy, please stand and be recognized. Thanks for your service to the state of Missouri. Glad to have you here. Further discussion? Senator from St. Francis, what purpose do you rise?
Could I inquire the Senator from the 10th?
Senator from the 10th. The Senator from the 10th is not on the floor.
It's close.
Senator from the 10th is at her desk. Do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Senator, I was listening to discussion. I don't wish to make this any worse, but you see where I'm talking about for the need for the possible amendment. If you have a way to avoid the situation where you're talking about, but for us to avoid continuous going to that body for results and not having judgments, summary judgments. Can you tell me, can you enlighten me?
Yeah, so here's my concern. It's my understanding that what leads families and schools to end up in the due process is that you have an IEP, which is the individualized, and I might be getting all the language wrong, education plan between the school district and the kid.
That's true, but they're gone.
And so you've got the school district and the kid, and one side disagrees with how things are going. So at some point, the parents file what they call for due process so that they can get a hearing to say, okay, the school district is not giving my child a free and appropriate public education, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to file for due process. Now, my understanding is that the parents can actually file every year that the because the kid just keeps getting older, as you might suspect, and they can go ahead and file every year, regardless of whether or not your amendment is on or this law changes. They can file every year that they feel that their IEP is out of compliance with federal law. And so I'm not sure that your amendment would prevent what you're doing, what you wanted to prevent, because I think parents are still going to be able to come back and file every year and still get in front of the Administrative Hearing Commission. And if I'm wrong, I'd love someone to tell me, but I think that's what would happen. In the meantime, if they get dismissed on summary judgment, then they can file suit in federal court, and then you've got the school district and the family having to slug this out in federal court instead of in front of an Administrative Hearing Commission. So I guess what I'd like to do before
Do you see that next line there behind the section that I'd like to take out? Does it deal with it at all? Where it says, in the case where the review of the Administrative Hearing Panel's commission's decision is sought by a school district or a parent or guardian, either party may appeal.
Neither party may appeal? Is that what it
Third
says?
Third party may appeal, and then it gives the appeal process.
What page is that on, Senator?
It's page 6, just below section 8.
Six.
I'm leaving in the ability to appeal, but I'd like to give the administrative hearing the ability to just find a summary judgment if they've...
And where would they, where do they appeal to, does it say?
One, the court shall hear the case without jury and shall receive records and administration to the hearing evidence. It's got a whole section of where you appeal may be taken from the judgment. Judicial review of the administrative hearing panel's decision may be instituted by filing a petition in the state or federal court of competent jurisdiction. Appeals to the state court shall be filed within 45 days.
Okay.
See, you see what I'm saying? So all I'm doing is giving the flexibility, and I don't know that much about administrative hearing panels, but I understand they're fairly fair, that they're just not going to start throwing out summary judgments just for the fun of it, so they don't have to hear them.
And I get that. I just, for these cases, Senator, are so contentious, and what we try to counsel people is that you need to not even get to this point in the first place.
I agree.
And we explain to parents over and over again that this is like a marriage. You are with this school district for 21 years, and it doesn't matter if you guys don't like each other. You both have to work in the best interest of this child. And my concern is that parents who have an axe to grind, or parents who truly feel like they are getting, you know, I'm trying to use language that's not inappropriate for the floor, but feel like that they've got an inappropriate education plan, they're going to keep filing every year anyway, regardless. And so what I don't want to happen is for everyone to be forced, including the school districts, into court instead of the Administrative Hearing Commission.
I understand.
I'm
going to go ahead and offer the amendment.
That's fine.
I think that if we have an administrative hearing set up, and for every other situation, we give them the ability to do a summary judgment, but we've carved out this one here and said, no, you can't do this on this. How many more carve-outs are we going to start doing to this group?
Process. And I think it's an appropriate conversation for us to have as a body, absolutely, I agree.
Thank you for the inquiry, Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, I have an amendment, and it has been distributed, and I would ask for a waiver of the weeding. Waiver.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. It has been distributed.
Thank you. I would move for its adoption.
Senator moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. Would you care to explain the amendment?
Well, I have a couple times, but I will again. This sets up the administrative on page 6 for those following in your programs. It sets up a different process, and it says to go to administrative hearing panel, and in all other cases, my understanding that they have the ability for summary judgment. So if you have a parent that just wants to keep appealing over and over, we don't have to go through the cost of doing these things. As the senator from the 10th, there is appeal process. There is a process that lets them in the future appeal, but I just think it's bad policy to start making exceptions for this, and maybe the people will disagree, but I'm offering this as an amendment. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
The senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 10th, if I could.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator, and I tried to follow your conversation with the senator from St. Francis, and I'll inquire of the senator from the 8th. My limited understanding is that summary judgment is good. It's judicial effectiveness. It's always appealable, because it is a dispositive motion. So I guess I'm trying to understand what judicial efficiencies would be accomplished by getting rid of summary judgment, because I would hate to think that I don't know if the administrative has a Rule 11 in federal court proceeding where you can say, hey, this is just crazy, so dismiss pursuant to federal Rule 11, but...
Senator, and I probably should at this point tell you that I just had a conversation with some of the staff, and I think I have a better understanding. Okay. I know that this is appealable, and I understand that. My concern was if these things start getting thrown out regularly with summary judgment, or just, or are parents automatically just going to drag school districts into federal court when we could more appropriately handle it in the Administrative Hearing Commission? With that being said, I've now talked it over with some folks, and it's my understanding that right now the current panels that are they're impaneled by DESE, they actually can use something similar to summary judgment motion or summary judgment already. And so now that I know that, now that I know that's already how it works, it's just going to be in the Administrative Hearing Commission. I don't oppose his amendment, and I'm going to shut up.
Okay. All right.
I just had to make sure that we weren't taking...
No, I totally understand, because I think you raise a valid point. You can't... I think what you're saying is you don't have a problem with moving to the Administrative Commission and going that route as long as you don't fundamentally change the rules of the game that used to occur at DESE that now will occur at the Administrative Hearing
Commission. Yeah, I didn't want to make it easier for school districts to chuck these cases just because they're in a new venue. I don't think that that's the case with this, and so I'm happy with it. I just... Senator, these cases are the biggest black hole cases you have ever seen. They go on for years and years, and it is a huge drain.
Try being federally appointed in a criminal defense case. I got to go to Terre Haute, Indiana.
Yeah, well, that...
I mean, thank you. Thank you, Judge Sippel. I'm getting ready to go see... Yeah, I mean, it's I understand.
These are such a drain on resources for the school districts and such a drain on resources for the families that I didn't want more of these cases to go into federal court than we already have. It sounds like that this amendment will not result in that.
Okay, very
Thank
good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
To inquire the Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th, do you yield?
I do.
He does proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. I understand where the Senators from St. Francis is. I didn't have an opportunity to hear on why you put that particular prohibition in the bill to begin with. I don't know.
We've walked a very fine line trying to get this bill to this point. Both sides, very heated on both sides. So, this is one of the parents obviously did not want a summary judgment. I am going to vote no on the amendment, but I encourage the body to vote their will.
However they
and
want
whatever
to.
The whatever happens with the body, I have my intent not to remove it over in the House if it ends up getting on.
Well, and I appreciate that, and I understand where the parents are and things like that, but I do believe that the Senator from St. Francis has a point in judicial efficiencies and economies. You know, when as a matter of law, and that's what summary judgment is, as a matter of law, not emotions, not testimony, not, you know, this or that, but take everything that the complainant says as true, they still don't have a claim. That's what summary judgment is. And I just think it would be cheaper and more judicially efficient if we allowed that procedure to be in place. To move forward, but I understand the position that you're in. So thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
To inquire the Senator from St. Francis.
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield?
I yield.
He does proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. With your amendment, I think you have a valid point. I hope that the body adopts your amendment. I think it is important for the body to understand that summary judgment, as I discussed with the Senator from the 8th, is nothing more than saying, take everything that the claimant, the plaintiff, the party that has brought the lawsuit, so the parents, take everything that the parents say is true. They still don't have a case. That's what summary judgment is. So I don't know what would make it...
You want this group to have that ability.
Yeah.
They shouldn't use it much, but when it's appropriate... You want it used, and you don't want this carved out to be the only time they can't do that. And I just think that's
bad. Yeah, I mean, because the parents would drive here. You'd have to have a hearing. The outcome's going to be the same. I understand everyone wanting their day in court, but there becomes a point in judicial efficiency where if there are cases as a matter of law, it doesn't matter what the testimony is, take everything that the claimant says as gospel truth, they still don't have... grounds to be successful.
I appreciate that, and to tell you the truth, I was talking to my wife before we came back in, and she asked me what I was getting accomplished today, and I told her not much, and so I kind of got to tell her something tonight, so this is what I'm hoping I can tell her.
All right. All right. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? The senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th is not at her desk. Senator from the 10th does yield. Proceed.
How are we doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I have a follow-up question on this. My only experience, I don't have experience as a lawyer in this area of practice, but as a parent, having an IEP,
sure.
We go through the process. It's been Kirkwood's been great to work with, but you can see, and I have dealt enough with people in the disability community to have heard examples where school districts are resistant because of some of the, you know, reasons that were stated earlier. My question is, I guess, you know, the standard for summary judgment really in that you don't have any dispute of material fact,
mm-hmm.
and the law is clear. I think in these instances it's probably pretty rare to have a summary judgment because there's probably going to be some dispute with regard to the facts.
Right. As a matter of fact, the staff told me that they've gone back and researched and they've only found two instances where a panel under DESE, which is the current model, used a summary judgment, and once it was upheld by a court and once it was not.
Okay. And I guess a little bit of my concern, I support what the senator from the 8th is trying to do, but when you have that track record, I guess, of what the DESE panels have done, and it's been rarely used, we are moving into the Administrative Hearing Commission. So past performance doesn't guarantee, you know, sort of
sure.
future results. I would think, though, and have to assume that it's probably utilized pretty rarely. The question I have, I guess, if you know the answer to this, is I don't see and I don't think that anything from the senator from St. Francis's amendment bars. Clearly, you have a new grievance or potentially cause of action at each IEP. You know,
right.
because you may be getting great services in third grade, but
right.
when your child hits fourth grade, that might change. Different teachers, different
right.
people, different therapists, whatever. You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah. So
I don't think we're doing anything with that, but I certainly wouldn't want to.
No,
I don't think we could do that because federal law, I think, would govern
you're right.
it anyway.
You're right. Absolutely. And this does not, in my opinion, do that. Because what would happen is, even if the old IEP was in the middle of this process, whether it be at the Administrative Hearing Commission or in federal court on appeal, the family can still file for due process on the next IEP.
Right.
And the next IEP. And I've seen that over and over again because my firm represents parents in these cases, not school districts. We represent parents, and we've had parents who have had to file year after year after year
right.
Because the school district continues to just, you know, ignore the requests. And so no, nothing in this would prevent them from doing that. And as a matter of fact, federal law would prevent us from preventing them.
Yeah, there would be a preemption issue. Okay, thanks.
Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator from St. Francis, you are recognized to close.
Mr. President.
Senator from St. Francis. He closes. The senator from St. Francis moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment Number 1. Further discussion on Senate Substitute for Senate Bill for 595. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close on the adoption motion of the Senate Substitute.
The senator from the 8th moves the adoption of Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 595. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 8th.
Mr. President, now I move that Senate Bill 595, as amended by the Senate Substitute, be declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from the 8th moves that Senate Bill 595 be declared perfected and ordered printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on that same calendar, Senate Bill 877. The senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 877 be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Stoddard.
Mr. President, I have a Senate Substitute, and I'd like to send it forward. It's been distributed, and so I request unanimous consent for a waiver of the reading.
Send the substitute forward. Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator from Stoddard.
Mr. President, the underlying bill deals with the different state departments submitting their FTEs to the pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, and then the substitute also adds language that says that each member of both bodies will have access to that report on an electronic format. It'll be posted on each department's website. Additionally, we ask that the departments list the job description or classification of the employees that are hired or employed, and also the location where they're located. Having served on appropriations for 6 years, I know that oftentimes we as a body in the legislature fund FTEs, and oftentimes a full-time equivalent does not necessarily mean that there's actually an individual that is in the job and working. And so it's difficult to ascertain just how many employees are in the department. This running, ongoing report, I think, will be an assistance to future legislatures so that they can understand just exactly how many employees are being employed in the different departments, and the legislature can act accordingly. And I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute, Mr. President, and I'm open for questions.
The senator moves the adoption of the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 877. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the first, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I inquire the senator from Stoddard?
Senator from Stoddard, do you yield?
Certainly.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. What was the number of the bill?
Number of the bill is 877. Figured it was a bill that was on your to-do list because you're for good government.
That's right, and that's why I came in to have a little discussion. I want to thank you, Senator, for the bill. It came through my committee that I chair, governmental accountability.
Appreciate you getting that out.
And I really believe that this is a good step towards us having more information, not only when we go through the appropriations process, you know, every year, with only 11 of the 34 senators in this body being very active in that process. And, you know, when we go through each one of those budgets and try to do, you know, the work that will serve this body, you know, to make sure that we're being good stewards of the people's money, one of the questions that we ask often is about how much authority are you asking for where it's empty authority, where those are not really people filled in those FTEs, right?
Yes,
full-time equivalent employee.
Yes,
so I think having this information made available to all of us in the body and on a regular basis and an updated basis is going to be very, very good for the process and as we look at future budgets.
I think it will be, Senator, and I appreciate all your work on the committee. I know you work hard at it, as do all the members, and they spend a lot of time down there, and so they need to know just how many of these full-time equivalents are actually being filled with actual persons doing the jobs.
Right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator.
Further discussion. Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from Stoddard.
Senator from Stoddard, do you yield?
Certainly.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I don't have a problem with the legislation. Isn't this information brought forth currently?
No.
Only if you ask?
Yes, only if you ask, and very limited in what they come forth with.
And did this idea come from something specific?
This idea came from yours truly. Having been chairman of the Appropriations Committee and having served on the committee, as you have for a number of years, I don't know how many times that I've heard members or the chairman of the committee ask, okay, you're requesting 1,100 FTE, how many actual people are, as oftentimes I heard, warm bodies actually in the department?
That's a valid question. Do you think it would be better with all these reports and the statutes, with them going to the president and pro tems, going to the budget chair and the appropriations chair?
Well, it is available to all members of the legislature online. I just figured the pro tem, the speaker, can distribute it, get it to the people that desire to see it and know about it.
Do you, in your office...
If they don't want to wait on those two people where they can access it online?
Do you and... We get a lot of information sent to us at the beginning of the year, and you probably get much more because you're the pro tem, but I would assume we have a similar filing system with most of these reports we get.
Talking about the one here to my left?
Yes, the recycled.
Well, that's
the
great
system.
Thing about requesting that they put it online. It can be there, and if you want to access it, you just get online, and bam, right there the information is.
Okay,
isn't that what one of those guys that does a cooking show does? He goes, bam!
You're just such a computer guru, Senator. Thank you.
Guru?
Guru.
Further discussion. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Mr. President, before I close, I have an amendment that I've gotten, and I'd like to bring it forward. I don't think it has been distributed, and I would ask that it be read. Very small amendment. It's grammatical in nature.
Send the amendment forward. Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Engler to amend Senate Substitute. It says Engler.
Senator, it looks like you sent up the wrong amendment. It looks like one has been sent up. Senator, it needs to come from you, so.
The wrong document.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Mayer to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 877, page 1, section 23.230, line 14, by striking the first use of the word, quote, the, close quote, on said line.
Senator, would you care to explain the amendment?
Oh, I'd love to, Mr. President. It's just simply a correction to some grammar there on the line 14 says, such report shall be made available to the each member. And so I'm just taking out the, so it's available to each member. Just trying to correct some boot hillism and put it into English.
Senator moves the adoption of Senate Amendment number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. Does appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment number 1. Discussion on the Senate substitute? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Motion to perfect and order printed Senate Bill 877 with the Senate substitute as amended.
The Senator from Stoddard moves the adoption of the Senate substitute. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. Does appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate substitute. Senator from Stoddard.
I now move that Senate Bill 877 with a Senate substitute as amended be ordered, perfected, and printed.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have declared perfected and ordered printed Senate Bill number 877. The junior senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 710.
Senate bills for perfection on the informal calendar, Senate Bill 710. Who is that? Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 710 be called from the informal calendar and taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have a floor substitute that I'd like to send forward. It's in the process of being distributed. I will not close until it's completely distributed.
Senator, you've already submitted a Senate substitute earlier. That needs to be sent back, and then we will send this one forward.
You would send that one back, and then we'll send that one forward.
Send the pending Senate substitute back. And then this one was sent forward.
Thank you. I move for the adoption of this Senate committee substitute.
Senator, this will be known as Senate substitute number 2. You've moved the adoption. Would you care to explain the Senate substitute?
Thank you, Mr. President. What this does is last week we had the hospice people up, and we wanted to make sure that they were excluded from any type of looking at the doctor's script order in the last few days of their life. And several of the senators had talked about that, the need for that, and we did comply.
The senator moves the adoption of Senate substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion?
Mr. President, I would ask that you put this bill on the informal calendar.
This bill will be placed on the informal calendar with the Senate substitute pending. Senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. President. We'll stay on that calendar, Senate Bill 665.
Senate Bill 665 on the informal calendar, the senator from
Saline.
The senator from Saline is not on the floor. Sergeant at Arms. Senate Bill 665. Senator from Saline.
665 be brought up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Stoddard. I'm sorry, Senator from Saline.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to move. Let's see. I've got a Senate substitute.
Send the substitute forward.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the substitute.
The senator moves the adoption of the Senate substitute. Would you care to explain the Senate substitute?
And I also realize it has not been distributed. So what this is a land conveyance for, there's a number of the, when MoDOT closed down their highway facilities, there's a number of the older facilities were in the name of the office administration, and this will move those titles to the Highway Commission so that they can be disposed of by the Commission. The substitute was just some technical changes that were suggested by the Office of Administration. Be glad to answer any questions. It's not in administrative. I'm not.
The senator from Saline moves the adoption of the Senate substitute. That has not been distributed yet, and so we will not close until everyone has had a copy of the Senate substitute.
Would you like to stand at ease?
Well,
Senator, I'll stand at ease.
Are you asking for that, Senator?
I'm asking the floor leader. Huh? Could we stand at ease while it's being distributed?
Seeing no objection, the Senate will stand at ease. The Senate will come to order. Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, would you place that bill back on the informal calendar?
Senate Bill 665 will be placed on the informal calendar. The junior senator from St. Charles. You're welcome.
Would you see if there are messages from the House? And if there are, would you please have those read?
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read the messages.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 1337, an act relating to cardiopulmonary resuscitation instruction in schools. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1373, an act relating to county annual budgets. Also, House Bill 1492, an act relating to county municipal courts. Also, House Bill 1577, an act relating to foster care students. Also, House Bill 1634, an act relating to the recycling of newspapers. Also, House Bill 1641, an act relating to an American Red Cross special license plate. Also, House Bill 1668, an act relating to United States Olympic Committee special license plates. Also, House Bill 1341, an act relating to utilities. Also, House Committee Substitute Number 2 for House Bill 1524, an act relating to the improvement and maintenance of private roads. Also, House Bill 1484, an act relating to electronic notifications and forms from the Department of Revenue. Also, House Bill 1880, an act relating to a centennial business recognition. Also, House Bill 1048, an act relating to school directors in urban districts, emergency clause adopted. Also, House Bill 1062, an act relating to school accountability. Also, House Bill 1170, an act relating to property tax assessment. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1171, an act relating to juvenile court jurisdiction. Also, House Bill 1221, an act relating to the designation of a memorial highway. Also, House Bill 1261, an act relating to the designation of a memorial bicycle and pedestrian bridge, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you. Mr. President, looks like the senators from Saline's bills have been, substitutes have been distributed, so let's go back to this order of business. Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar. Senate Bill 665.
Seeing no objections, we'll go back to the informal calendar. Senate Bill 665, the senator from Saline.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 665, with the Senate substitute pending, be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Saline.
Again, I think there's a few more copies to be got to be distributed, but this is just a land conveyance bill. Many of the old facilities and pieces of land were in the name of the office administration. This moves them from the office administration to the commission so that they can be cleared up. Glad to answer any questions.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Briefly inquire the senator from Saline.
Senator from Saline, do you yield?
I do yield.
He does proceed.
In all fairness, Senator, I just received this, so I just want to page through it with you in case there's something in it that pertains to my district. So it's, while I'm doing it, it's convenience of certain properties.
From the office administration to highway commission.
For what?
From the office of administration, to the highway commission.
Because I see, I don't know if Carondelet in the River de Pere, if they contacted the senators that this property affects or anything.
This is just a conveyance from one to the, to just clearing the title up is what we're doing. So then at some later point, they will be conveyed from by the commission to whoever, whatever
they do. Kind of like a consent bill or something?
It just takes the old titles that were in, you know, before the commission was created, the titles were in the name of the office administration. It moves these old properties from the office administration to the commission, and then they will be cleared up after that point.
Like someone from OA came and said, would you do this bill so we could get some cleanup?
It came from the Highway Commission, and I was unaware of the substitute. The substitute came from OA. That's reading it. I was not aware they had done that. But
I want to make sure they're not getting aware of something in my district that the state owns.
I think they sold your house, Senator. I'm pretty sure.
Well, I own my house. The state doesn't. I just want to make sure I got several state properties in my district that they're not transferring something without me knowing about them. The only thing I've seen is I vaguely go through this as just some stuff around River De Pere, nothing in my district. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Close.
The Senator from Saline moves the adoption of the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 665. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Saline.
I move the Senate Bill 665 as amended by the Senate substitute be declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The Senator from Saline moves that Senate Bill 665 with Senate substitute be declared perfected and order printed. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have declared Senate Bill 665 perfected and order printed. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Same calendar, Senate Bill 439.
On that same calendar, Senate Bill 439. The Senator from Stoddard.
President, I move that Senate Bill 439 with Senate Committee substitute and a pending amendment be brought before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Stoddard.
Mr. President, I believe that the Senator from the 11th has the floor. I believe you need to check that.
That is correct. The Senator from the 11th does have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President, for acknowledging the obvious. Mr. President, if I might, could I inquire of the Senator from the 22nd?
The Senator from the 22nd, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, you and I have, I want to kind of get to where we're at with what 439 says, and what we've talked about in these meetings, so the body, those who care about this, you know kind of what's going on here. The problem with 439 is that it really doesn't have anything in it that a lot of the contractor groups, a majority of the contractor groups, a bulk of the contractor groups that do this, that, by the way, the contractor groups themselves that have been involved in this consist of union and non-union contractors, and they are from major metropolitan areas, some of them are statewide. They have largely said if there is a problem, the fair, even playing field will be
mandatory reporting,
because it just, and people have said, well, that might lower wages, and those people have said, well, maybe it will, maybe it'll raise wages,
and it probably
but
will.
It will be a fair even playing field. The one, I want to be precise, the one, there is one organization or one contractor that in one of our meetings on mandatory reporting said, well, I'm not against mandatory reporting, but if I'm going to do mandatory reporting, I also want to do away with the mode method.
And do an average weighted.
Well, okay, and here's what I want to get to. I don't know if you have looked into what is in the Senator from Stoddard's bill, and he is citing the occupational employment statistics. Now, I briefly told the Senator from 13, I don't know if you looked into this at all.
No, I listened to your comments, though, and
well, I made a very cursory thing, which is, you know, this is the federal government. And by the way, it's a survey. And let me read from it a couple of things. It is a survey, and this is, you know, it sounds good that you're just, you know, the word average sounds good and all this. The problem is the way what is in, and I want to make it clear to the body, the way is what written now is we're taking a survey of everyone,
We're not taking a survey of electricians, per se, and isolating that.
How
like
current law is figured, which makes more sense to compare laborers to laborers,
right.
Carpenters to carpenters.
Because there's a different skill set.
Not as you said earlier, somebody that works at the drive-thru at McDonald's would be compared to an orthopedic doctor.
Right.
They would average those wages. That,
well, it gets worse. Here is from the actual document that the Center from Sauter distributed. And it reads as clearly as any federal document normally does. The QES survey is a federal-state cooperative program between the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the state workforce agencies. SWAs from all 50 states, plus the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands participate in the survey. Occupational employment and wage estimates note, not data, at a national level are produced by the BLS. Now, a couple of observations. First of all, for all the stuff we always talk about the federal government and the fact that right now in the state we have a department that's given that responsibility to get the data to the best extent they can, and in the current system, it's not reported, which has led to potentially some problems. By the way, we'll get to this, but if you look at counties where reporting is higher, the wages are adjusted, okay? So I think the contractors who actually do this business, when they meet with senators who know absolutely nothing about this business, and by the way, none of the contractors, except maybe one, and I'm not even sure, have cited this occupational employment statistics from the federal government.
Well, I've mentioned in a couple of those meetings that this same study would show that state senators in Missouri ought to make $14,000 a year.
Well, and you raise a good point. And what I was going to transition to is if you read the actual document the Center from Sauter distributed, per the handout, the data, if you notice, and quote, on the second sentence, the QES program collects data on wage and salary workers.
What are you reading from?
I am reading from the document that has the Center from Sauter's name in the corner, and it says occupational employment statistics.
Okay.
And then it has this
Got it.
Very small words that read like stereo instructions, as clear as any good federal document. All I need is, you know, a tax code out here. Okay, from his actual handout.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone has read this. The QES program collects data on wage and salary workers. Senator, construction workers are not necessarily salary workers.
Correct.
And their wages, and a salary worker is in distinction from an hourly wage, right?
Correct.
Construction workers are typically paid by the hour. So they are combining salary and hourly and everything. And to get back to your point, that's why, according to that survey, we're supposed to make $14,000.
My understanding, the way they came to these numbers was they just called a couple people and based that
exactly.
Average.
Exactly.
There is nothing very scientific about it, opposed to the way the mode method is done.
Well, even if the point is the mode method would work
if
whatever
deficiencies, would report
if you had mandatory reporting. What I'm getting to is here's another problem from the Center from Stoddard's own document, where he's citing this federal program conducted by a federal bureaucrat who potentially doesn't respond to anybody, who's unaccountable to anybody, and we're now going to emulate a federal system. Well, here's the problem with that. Go to another paragraph, which is just a little further down. This doesn't cite his paragraph. The QES program surveys approximately 200,000 establishments per panel every 6 months, taking 3 years. So that this is from the document that they are about trying to make Missouri law, that they are going to take the construction industry and go to a survey that goes to, that includes salary, da-da-da-da-da, in with maybe, may not even include hourly, may not even include all the occupations, just the ones that participate, and is 3 years old by their own admission. And their trying to replace that with the
process that's done yearly.
And by the way, in the discussion that we've had, every contractor group, some contractor groups who have non-union members,
well,
have said,
I know,
fix
site,
it tomorrow.
I looked into this during the break. Site, AGC of St. Louis, and ASA, American Subcontractors Association, they were all represented in those meetings. Every one of those groups have both union and non-union contractors. But as a group, together, collectively, they all oppose any change to prevailing wage. And what I appreciated about those meetings, and it's been stated by you and the senator from the 13th, is we had people that actually own the companies in there. The ones that, you know, quote unquote, have the skin in the game. They put their life on the line to own the company. They're the ones that know what's going to affect their company and what is not going to affect their company. And other than one group, they were all in agreement that either leave it alone, or have mandatory reporting for everybody. And if you want to address those 68% of the counties that don't report hours, you could do something like the amendment that we're on from the senator from the 13th and put it in your bid specs, or you just mandate that they'd have to turn their hours in every year.
Yeah, I mean, what the senator from Stoddard, what the body may not realize is the document he's citing, we in theory would use as part of a survey Guam's wages. Guam. Virgin Islands. I'm surprised they didn't have Abramoff's old client, the Marianas, where, you know, Marshall's gets a lot of their off-brand stuff. I mean, that's what they have. This stuff is 3 years old. By the occupation, I just got something that we...
That's why I have a little bit of an issue with the... I think the way we calculate wages in Missouri, because we use both a collective bargaining and a mode, I've got a list here that show what every state does. Some only use a collective bargaining agreement statewide. Some only use the mode. We're a state that uses both. So if one doesn't work, we revert to the other one.
Well, the point is, somebody's saying we're completely wrong. I'm reading from his own document. According to the report, the Bureau of Labor Statistics itself, this is the group that puts this out, response rates are increasingly a source of concern. It has become more difficult to achieve and maintain high response rates. This is the Occupational Employment Statistics Survey itself. They're saying this. The report further asserts there is considerable variation by state, by industry, by establishment size regarding the Occupational Employment Statistics Survey. Look, before we go ravage the construction industry in Missouri by using something that uses Guam and the Virgin Islands and doesn't even have, I can get into the percentages of how terrible it is, and how they use salary compared to maybe not even calculate hourly, which is how the construction industry works for the most part. I don't want to do that. I would like to, if there is a genuine problem, try to address it by saying, let's talk to the people who do this work. And everybody in that room agreed, as you, I think, except for one group, I don't want to be inaccurate, but even one of those members of that group said, I could go along with mandatory reporting if we change this and go...
To a different method.
Didn't even say this.
Right.
I'm not even sure they advocated using the same method we use that has Guam and the Virgin Islands in it.
You hit on that earlier, and I think it's very important when we have two industry opponents fighting on an issue, and you get those groups together, and you try to come to a conclusion between those two groups. You know, I had that OSHA 10 bill a couple years ago. I had some industry people that wanted to see things changed. I had others that liked it. I had some that thought, why should my guys have to get an OSHA 10 class if all they're doing is dropping off gasoline for the equipment? The department was going to make their drivers get OSHA 10. We had a meeting with all interested parties together. we resolved it through the industry finally agreeing on some change. I don't think the industry has, well, actually, I think the industry has made it pretty clear to us that they like the status quo.
Right, and you know, I want to make it kind of clear, I'm not an advocate of mandatory reporting. I mean, if not all the industry is reporting, I mean, my view of this is the state, quite frankly, could probably avoid mandatory reporting by letting the school districts or all these school superintendents or city managers come forward
right.
and say, okay, why don't you make it part of your bid spec?
I do in exactly
And by the way, I don't know if you heard that this morning, but I read a letter from the Joplin School that they are working with the Department of Labor now after being right. burned. And what did they say to do? Get the payrolls to make sure that everything was done correctly. What if that had been part of the bid specs before they awarded the contract?
Right.
They probably would have found out that this was a fictitious company.
One thing that was left out of that discussion that that Director Redman shared with us was the demolition company, and I think they were actually from Oklahoma. Not only did they have quite a few workers that were neither documented in Missouri or Oklahoma, Social Security numbers didn't match anywhere, but what we left out today was they stole all the copper from the school building that was demolished. They were trying to make a profit on the backs of the people that just had been through the worst thing in their lives.
Well, by the way, people are rushing around talking about this Bureau of Labor Statistics. Here's another little thing that, you know, our staff's pretty good at looking up this stuff and going to their website and reading all about it, which probably the proponents of this didn't necessarily do. The study also demonstrated up to a 30 percentage point difference regarding response rates. So this survey that we're going to change the entire industry to, there's a 30% differential in who reported. So, you know, that's what we're about. We are poised to make that law. I just want everybody to make sure that we are going to change 3 decades with an idea that somebody came up with of,
who knows?
Well, let's pull it out of the sky. Well, let's do what the feds do. You know? So, anyway, what I want to get to is, and I know you do, the purpose of those meetings was to listen to the people who do this. And what I found a commonality about was that they said, if everybody reports, the wages might go up, the wages might go down. Now, I will get into a broader discussion with you because I really want to, which is, the other thing we miss is we've been in these meetings with the industry and we've been in these meetings with contractors and we're state senators. What about the people who actually make this money? Who are they? They're, in theory, fellow Missourians, aren't they?
Right.
And their state legislature right now is upset that some of them were in an area that normally doesn't have wages is making $28 an hour. Is that something to be upset about? Or should we not be happy? Don't we have an entire economic development department that strives for that?
Yes.
Don't we have a definition in statute of a quality job? And here, being the philosopher kings we are, we're sitting here and we meet with interest or whatever. And the point is, the other day this finally occurred to me, why are people upset that fellow Missourians are making money
and
in a job?
And have a pension. And have health insurance coverage.
Well, pensions have somehow in the last 3 years, and maybe it's because...
have become a bad thing somehow, but...
When did that become a bad thing?
I'm thankful for my 20 years. My pension I've been paying into for 20 years. I am thankful for that.
Yeah, I mean, when did all of this become bad? Is it just because we went through a downturn, we're in a recession, we're coming out of that, and we just kind of... turn on each other and we just say, well, I'm starting to resent these pensions. Or pensions were always a good thing, weren't they? They were how people went to college. And pensions actually go back to Bismarck because he wanted to hold off people because what happened is people tended to die of starvation in old age. So that progressive leader Otto von Bismarck said we better come up with pensions so older people don't starve to death. But somehow we've changed this culture. And I hear this whole debate where here is sometimes regions of the of our state, which I'm happy to be a citizen of this state, where we subsidize the sheriff's department. And you were involved in that.
Yes.
And I've heard an argument against it.
And well, my county donated their money to help other counties. Mine was a donor sheriff.
Right.
We didn't have the problems that St. Charles had. They didn't want to be involved in that. Our sheriff came up. He went on the tours with us. He saw the disgusting situations in some counties in Missouri where jails were literally falling apart, where you wouldn't even want to keep your dog there.
Right.
My sheriff thought, you know what, that we were in the senator from Lewis's district. Where the police officers had to buy their own uniform, had to right. buy their own gun, had to buy their own police car.
Right.
They couldn't have anybody sit at the jail for 24 hours while prisoners are locked up there.
And what happened?
Well, my sheriff said, that's deplorable. I'm in favor of helping out those other counties.
No, what I mean is, what did the elected body of the state of Missouri do about that?
Oh, we helped them out.
Now, there were probably people who said, well, we don't set wages in the state, right? But people made a decision. Well, yeah, you sometimes have to. I mean, I've heard adjectives on this bill that have described prevailing wage as, quote, unquote, 3 weeks ago, perverse. That adjective was used. 4 decades of creating the middle class is now perverse. This morning, I heard collusion.
Right.
Okay. Now, by the way, we do set wages all the time. First of all, the voters of Missouri set a minimum wage.
I read through that correspondence from the senator from Stoddard. All I saw were letters from, maybe it was labor unions, to the department. And the department responded to it. I didn't see what he described in any of this stuff.
Senator, it's worse than that. As you well aware, you've been in the meetings. My contractor, who happens to be a member of the Republican Party,
yeah.
but he also happens to be a union contractor, even though he belongs to an organization that has union and non-union members, but is an advocate of prevailing wage for the following reasons, that it gives him a trained workforce at no cost to the taxpayers and provides his employees, and he's made that decision. Okay? Now, it gets worse than that. He told everybody in the meeting, I'm sure when only one side of the industry gets involved and does this, then it may be unfair. Hence, here's my solution. Not going to some federal bureau that has the Virgin Islands and Guam, and they do a survey every 3 years, and they can be up to 30% off in the reporting rate, and it's from the federal government. And the report, by the way, on the other pact I didn't bring up, it leans towards smaller states like Oklahoma and South Carolina. This is from, as you know, we have that staff person named Mr. Thalhuber, and I had him look all this up, and he did a very good job. And I'm reading from what he looked up about this organization from their website. So, you know, I trust him to write the education formula, and I trust him to look up stuff, and he did an exceptional job. That's and I'm exactly. reading from the stuff right now. And that's I wanted to find out what this was before we put it in the statute books, before we ravaged the entire Missouri construction industry, even though right now, if we want to solve what may be a problem for in the construction industry in non-urban, non-suburban Missouri, the contractors have said, solve it tomorrow, have mandatory reporting.
Right. You could do that. You could adopt Senator from the 13th Amendment that mandates that you put that in your bid specs. That's another
way. Yeah, I mean,
way.
What I mean is...
But that's another way to do it.
Senator,
we could make it easier by allowing contractors to report online like seven other states have done.
Right.
There's a lot of different steps we can do to make the current process work better.
Right.
Without eliminating the whole process.
Right. And the other thing, too, is if you look at some of the wage surveys, the other argument that comes up anecdotally sometimes in this is, well, we're paying the St. Louis rate. Well, you know the first response to the contractors that we got in the room is, you want to solve that tomorrow, everybody reports. That's what, if that's happening, and by the way, I haven't seen an example of that, but I'm sure in a very, very skilled trade like a boilermaker, where there's maybe only a few hundred of them in Missouri because it's such a high level of proficiency and, you know, the boilermaker, you just don't grow them that quickly. I mean, that I'm sure among those highly skilled trades, when one of those trades is involved, I'm sure it's a higher wage for that. But again, the solution is a fair, even playing field. Now, I want to just stress, I sort of agree with the contractors in that room that say, there's really not a problem, this isn't doing it. But if you want to get there, I'm certainly happy to explore mandatory reporting.
Yeah,
but I will, getting back to my point, I just wanted to reemphasize something. I agree at some level with what one of the contractor groups said and what you just said. We don't need to even bother with state law. If the school district or the city or these local communities or counties are worried about this, put it in their bid specs. If this Joplin School District had put some sort of requirement to prove that a contractor was a contractor and existed and required payrolls, they wouldn't have gotten burned by an LSA contractor. But I am not going to sit here and allow the Missouri construction industry that has largely been that, both union and non-union, that has a great job training program, and because people are making $28 and some politician down here has in their head that they should be making 14. There needs to be, you know, there's market forces, of course, but by the way, you can't let market forces can be described like a game of basketball. You know, game of basketball is competitive, but you have the same number of people on the team and you have rules, you have the same size court, the same size baskets. You don't allow a game of basketball to be, it's still competitive, but it has rules and basic leveling things where everybody plays on that court. Same with football. You don't allow a team to have 15 members and one to have seven. And so that's how prevailing wage is supposed to work. Now, if the state feels better saying we ought to have some sort of reporting because some people in the industry don't do it. And if they also, Senator, want to say, as the contractors have, I want to make sure all the hours are counted and calculated.
I had a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you buy, which by and large I thought was anecdotal evidence, you know, three times to the senator from Phelps, he gave me examples of contractors that won't bid because he says the division ignores the bid hours or ignores the hours reported. And I said, please, give me those contractors' names. And I've asked him on multiple occasions, just give me one of their names. Because if what you're saying is true, the division is breaking the law.
Senator, here's my thing. He doesn't need to I agree with you, but here's my point with him. If he's seen that, I like him. He's an honorable senator. But if we're talking about this bill, let's put something in the law that says the department can't do that, or the department has to count.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that, because I get back to what my Republican contractor that I invited to this debate said. Let's create an even playing field. Let's make everybody report. You know? And that creates a fair system.
The guy I invited, he got an engineering degree from Rolla, and he went to law school at, I believe, Mizzou, studying this area. He's an expert in this area. And he probably knows more about prevailing wage than anybody I've ever
met. Senator, the other thing, too, is we've been talking...
And he can tell you even messing with it at all is going to be a disaster.
Sure.
Now, if you try, maybe you can tweak a couple things. Maybe you can allow online, putting your survey results online. Maybe the maintenance part is up for discussion. But eliminating the mode method for a weighted average would never work. There's a process that's set up right now. That's the frustrating thing to me, Senator, is there is a process set up right now that looks very, very simple. You know, I have the survey sheet right here. It's a two-page sheet. It's actually really a one-page sheet, but the second page tells you what you're supposed to put in these little lines here. But all it's asking for is your occupational title, your number of hours, your total hours, and your basic hourly rate. That's all you have to turn in. That seems simple to me. And, you know, another thing, this was frustrating, too, when we hear about a lot of,
Bill.
A lot of, again, anecdotal evidence.
Hand these out, please, sir.
But I got the rulings of objections to the prevailing wage, to the commission adopting the prevailing wage rate, the annual wage order, over the past 10 years. So over 10 years, you would think there'd be, you know, a lot of objections. You know how many there were in 10 years? 61 objections in 10 years. 19 were dismissed or withdrawn. 27 were settled. Both parties came together and settled. And only 12 were ruled upon in 10 years. Where's the problem?
Well, again, I don't...
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
We've had 12 that actually got to a ruling out of 61 in 10 years. That's barely over one a year.
I still don't get the whole base argument that somehow it's a problem if people are getting job training that we don't have to pay for as a taxpayer, right?
Yeah, drug testing, OSHA training.
And so what happens, Senator, and by the way, I don't know if you've gotten it yet, I am distributing right now this. You might look through this at your leisure. This is what happened in Kansas City, and we talk a lot about tax credits in this place. Well, some of these projects involve tax credits, and we think that in historic and low income that we're creating jobs. You'll notice in some of these pictures that people appear to be being paid in cash in some of these pictures. And by the way, we also, the proponents of this bill, say that they're trying to protect the taxpayers.
Who's paying taxes if they're getting paid in cash?
Nobody's paying taxes. And by the way, I don't know if everybody on this job site are citizens.
Where was this?
This is in Kansas City. This is on several projects that involve low-income housing tax credits in downtown Kansas City and historic tax credits. It's your tax dollars at work, and it's subcontractors being paid, it appears, in cash. By the way, if you go to the very back, the very last picture is what appears to be an adolescent on the job site, the very last picture. And... It appears not to be an adult. Yeah, this has been turned over. I'm just saying, now, the senator from Stoddard earlier said, well, what does this have to do with prevailing wage? Well, we've got something where we're trying to talk about payrolls, establishing that contractors exist. We have evidence from Joplin and other cities that contractors come in, fly by night, and a horrific thing has happened in southwest Missouri. And guess what happens in those terrible things. The Attorney General can only do so much about people who try to come in and manipulate that situation, but there's fly-by-night contractors. There's out-of-state contractors. And I'm not talking about contractors from Oklahoma City or Dallas. I'm talking about maybe even contractors from Mexico City.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying is that's where they're missing this whole thing. And the way to solve that is not to unravel prevailing wage and say, well, we're not really doing away. Well, yeah, you're suspending it. That's what the bill does.
Well,
and by the way, they're also removing all
of the last 10 years.
Right.
Every county in Missouri has been declared a disaster area at some point or another.
Right.
So when we say that this is only for a certain part of the state, no, it's not. It's going to affect every county in the state.
Senator, it's going to potentially affect every county, but the other thing, in practical terms, with the flooding and everything, it could affect Jackson County. So they say this is a rural thing, but by the definition of the bill, you could have a major urban county suddenly
My county, we've had both tornadoes and flooding.
Now, am I really going to sit here my last year in the Senate and go home and say, we passed a bill that allows somebody or the legislature to suspend prevailing wage, and I've got good news for everybody here in the middle class in Jackson County. You're not going to make $24 an hour anymore. Because of my hard work, you're going to make $16. Where does this come from? Let me get to another point on wages. I don't want to forget this, and I forgot it earlier. I do make a point on wages. There is a myth out here that somehow if you pay people less, you're going to be able to build more. That's a fallacy, and you heard that from the industry. You heard that from everybody who's a contractor. What happens is, and this shouldn't surprise you, you pay people less, the contractor doesn't pass that savings on to the taxpayer. They pocket it. That's what's happening with these photos I'm distributing. That's not, somebody doesn't pay something, somebody doesn't do something, that's what they're doing.
They've always said that Henry Ford paid his employees very well, and his theory was, if he pays them well, what are they going to do?
Right.
They're going to buy his cars with it.
Right. I'm just saying, though, that the myth that they're not saying is they assume that the contractor is going to pass on the savings to the taxpayer somehow. What they'll do is they'll pocket the money. I mean, they'll come in with a close bid, or they'll bid low and they'll have a bunch of change orders. We see that all the time. That's in the status quo. Mm-hmm. But the point is, keep in mind, all of this that I'm distributing is happening under current law. It doesn't even contemplate doing away with that.
Onto this, we heard another interesting story from Director Redman after the tornadoes up in Bridgeton, where a company from Michigan came in and got a bid. And they went to an equipment sales company where you rent equipment. They didn't finish the job, and they moved back to Michigan with the equipment that they rented. Stole it. And that's happening right now.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, everything...
And the only way they can find out about this stuff is through laws like prevailing wage, where hours have to be submitted.
Right, or whether they're paying them.
Challenged if somebody like the school at Joplin said, we need to figure out who these people are. If it wasn't for that, this would have never happened. They would have never found out.
When Joplin Schools, when the person there contacted the state,
right,
what was the first thing the state said to get to help them?
Dig.
Call your contractor that burned you, that's going on, that you're in the dispute with, and get the payrolls.
Right.
Get those. That's the most basic step.
And then,
now, the senator from Stoddard earlier...
There, they found names.
The
11 or 13 names that they couldn't...
Right.
They couldn't find Social Security cards to match the names in both Oklahoma and Missouri.
The senator from Stoddard earlier, when the senator from 13th was inquiring of him, said, well, you know, now they, in the normal course of things, can find workers' comp insurance and unemployment insurance. Yeah, but how do you really find out if you're a public entity and using public taxpayers that somebody's not paying that? Well, guess what we did? We also, fortunately, it got vetoed. But think about this. We also don't like whistleblowers around here. So I guess if there was somebody who knew about something like that, we don't really have the person. Now, that's not law, but
right.
Somebody tried to make it law where we don't even like whistleblowers. But I want the myth. Think about this for a moment. There is an intuitive myth that's put out that somehow if you pay people less, that you'll have more construction. They don't contemplate that some contractors are in this to make money. And they're not going to pass on those savings to the taxpayer. They're going to pocket the money that they don't pay the state through unemployment, workers' comp, or whatever. The pictures I'm showing you from projects in Kansas City, that's happening now in the status quo. Imagine the world where you don't even have anything.
You know, and that's dangerous. When you start either when you don't classify workers correctly, or if you tell them to fill out 1099s, the odds of that employee going out and claiming that $100 that was paid to him, like these pictures show, is zero to none.
Right.
You're not going to collect any income tax on that, right? They're probably not going to have any health care.
Well, and that's the problem is...
They're not trained. They're probably not going through an apprenticeship program or a training program. They probably don't have OSHA 10.
No, right. And keep in mind, with all due respect to some sectors of that in the suburbs and urban, you know, I'm happy to be part of a citizen of the state, but I get back to you were involved in the state recognizing that it wasn't right or fair for sheriffs and their deputies to be on social welfare because they weren't paid enough. So what did we do? We intervened, and we got involved in their wages. And I would do all of that again, even though my county is a donor county.
You have deputy sheriffs who are on food stamps, and all their kids get free and reduced lunch.
But, Senator, let me tell you something.
And we expect them to go out and protect us.
Here's what some people are saying. They're advocating, let's adopt this federal system, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that may not even contemplate hourly wages, that may just have salary, that may just have this. I don't know who came up with this. I don't know if this was this was a brilliant strategy by staff or something, but this just, you know, and so I don't know where they even picked this. I don't even know where they got this.
I don't know either.
I mean, I know it's a federal thing, but I don't know.
I mean, probably the internet.
Right. And so, well, this sounds good. Doesn't that sound like a good occupational employment statistics? Okay, so you have all the pitfalls with this. Dad is 3 years old. And by the way, everything I told you, I'm reading from the document the senator from Stoddard distributed to this body. Everything I told you, it's right there. Okay, so you go to these other counties where we talk about the higher wage. Okay, absent that, who picks up the tab for the contractor or somebody else who doesn't pay for this stuff? It's the taxpayer. We're allegedly doing this to protect the taxpayer. So I'm going to lower wages. I'm going to remove standards so contractors now can be fly-by-night, come in from out of state, not pay anything, not have any apprenticeship programs, not do that. And so I get to pay for it through as a federal taxpayer through the Medicaid program.
Exactly.
And that's typically what happens.
And what happened in Joplin, they rebid that. And then who got the bid? It went to a local Missouri contractor in Joplin. Probably where it should have went the first time.
The senator from 13th was correct when he said, when he went into how...
The lowest and best.
Yes, that local governments... I mean, think about... We've all been around... the senator from 14th is a member. We've had members that have come from local government that are still members of local... that are school districts or cities. I was a city councilman. You're an elected official, you've got a city manager, you've got a school administrator, but nobody's per se an expert in building buildings or being aware of the pitfall. And I had a neighbor, Senator, and I remember the neighbor came to me and said, you know, Victor, I know what you always advocate about skilled craftsmen and stuff, but I've got a really good idea. I've got a guy who's going to redo my bathroom for $10 an hour. I said, I know that sounds intuitively wise, but is the guy who's doing this have any plumbing experience? Is he an apprentice plumber? Has he ever done a bathroom before? And I think his qualifications is he did a bathroom before somewhere, maybe a couple of them.
Rehabbed his own house at one time.
Senator, I'm not making this up. $5,600 later, my neighbor had a new bathroom. I had a new bathroom put in my house that I'm very proud of. Used a plumber. The guy was about, you know, the wage rate, which was three times what that guy paid. Done, da-da-da-da-da, about $2,400. Because the guy knew what he was doing, and he did all that. And so if you went to the average person and said, is it cheaper to build something paying somebody $10 an hour or somebody $25 an hour? People always don't know to ask, well, does the person know what they're doing?
Right.
Does the person have what they know? I mean, do they have any knowledge base of this? Do they have any analysis of, you know, do they know what they're doing? Because that's worth it. And, you know, there's, when you look at prevailing wage, I mean, there's been all sorts of statistics. It's cheaper to build a mile of highway
prevailing wage
using prevailing wage to the non-prevailing wage. And everybody goes, oh, no.
Footage
well,
is
the
cheaper.
Reality is that people, you get people on a job site who know what they're doing,
right.
And that's why you have foremen, and that's why you have all that. Now, I guess I'm getting back to the purpose of the meetings that we've had was it was important to listen to the people who actually do this, who understand this. We're state senators. We don't, per se, know. None of us are contractors. Well, I'm not a contractor. The senator from Stoddard is not a contractor.
I'm not
all
a
these
contractor.
People, and, but also, and there's some of our colleagues that maybe have been contractors.
Along with that, Senator, it was also important at the end of that first meeting. You know, we were kind of going round and round, and this was the initial meeting when it was just you and I, Senator from the 13th, the Senator from Phelps, Senator from, who else was there? Jasper. And we sat in the pro tem's office, and at the end, you asked a very valid question. What is the end game? Is this something that you want to become law? Do you think the governor will sign it? Do you think the House will take it up and pass it?
Or well, I do not purport to speak for the second floor,
well,
but
sure.
it would be unimaginable to me that a bill that undoes five decades of construction practice in which the changes are opposed by AGC, by NECA, by many major contractor groups.
ASA is a
that are made up that are made up of union and non-union contractors, and that the methodology is to replace the mode method with a federal occupational employment statistics that has three-year-old data, that has 30% variations, that only 66% respondents, that most of the respondents are in Oklahoma, North Carolina, South Carolina, and part of the statistics include Guam and the Virgin Islands. I just, you know, I'm not very smart, but I just can't imagine the second floor signing that. And by the way, forget about that. That's assuming it even makes it to the second floor. I don't know if this masterpiece emerges from the Senate miraculously. I don't know that the House takes it up and passes it that way. I mean, I think that there's going to be some people over there who are going to go, why is our goal to pay my own constituents less? I thought I came down here and the goal was to try to turn more people into middle class. I mean, isn't that the goal of our whole economic development department and what we do and what we purport? And yet with this bill, somebody was being paid $26 an hour. And when I first heard this, I thought, good.
We entice
that means I won't have to pay for their Medicaid.
Right. We entice companies to come here and pay 50% health insurance, the high wage of the county. I mean, we make them do that to come here. But if they're currently here, now we want to dumb the wages down.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Let's get back to, you know, one of the contentions pretty early on in this was, well, we don't set wages, blah, 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 blah. You know, this is unnecessary. I mean, you hear that about, keep in mind, okay, Senator, what does the Medicaid system do in the non-urban setting? One of the functions of Medicaid is it assures that those areas have medical services.
Correct.
Because absent something like that that pays people a set wage for specific services or whatever, you would probably not, leaving it entirely to market forces, have doctors or nurses or Medicare care everywhere. So one of the things for all of the faults with the Medicaid system or Medicare or whatever is that it has brought health care to places that if you left it entirely to market forces would not exist.
I agree.
Would not exist. And we have professional licensure boards, and we have bar associations that, whether government or quasi-governmental, set all sorts of things, whether it's representing people in court or whatever, we have all sorts of payment schedules. And look, the purpose of it is to try to establish fairness. We're not going to get there by doing away with this in disaster areas. We're not going to get there by adopting some system that we just pulled out of the internet from the federal government, which may not even, I don't know how accurate their survey is of our state. Why would we want the state to determine Missouri?
They said that state representatives and senators in Missouri should be making $14,000 a year.
Right. But what I mean is, the part of the problem is, we don't know how accurate is their data of Missouri. Now, if we were sitting there saying, I want everybody to also be clear in this whole debate, we're not sitting here saying, some of us are not sitting here saying, absolutely no changes at all.
I think what we're saying is, if the root cause of this problem is 68-70% of the counties are not reporting hours, we have a solution. Mandate that they report hours. Report 1 hour, and that'll prevail. You know, to me, that seems pretty simple.
Right. And I
don't necessarily buy the argument that, well, they're not going to support hours because of department and the division just ignore those hours. I haven't seen any data to support that.
Okay, let's go. Do you have the bill in front of you?
It's here somewhere. You know, real quick, I wanted to.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Talk about one more thing that I found.
I wanted to talk about a section of the bill. You go ahead, but I wanted to that we haven't talked about that has some brackets that bracket out an entire paragraph that's okay. Kind of important. That we haven't talked much about.
Why don't you do that first?
Okay. Well, you go ahead. I have the bill in front of me, and I just there's but several things, but
it was interesting to me. We've heard a lot about the schools down there that they're not going to be able to build six schools. They're only going to be able to build four schools because of the prevailing wage law. And we heard that when the bill first came up on the floor. We've heard that multiple times. It's been said in the newspaper.
Yes.
When we were sitting there with Director Redmond, I asked him point blank, and just to make it clear, the division has an office inside the school now. They're there every day. They talk to the school every day. So I asked the director point blank, in any of your discussions, and he's had a lot of them, with the superintendent, is the prevailing wage law limiting them from building an extra school building? Had that ever come up?
Right.
And what did Larry Redmond say?
They haven't brought it up. I mean, some...
He said,
Senator, here's
and
the
my
problem,
thought
though.
Would be, if it's something of that importance, two school buildings will not be built, wouldn't you think they might bring that up?
Senator, I have been here for 9 years. And I have seen the preposterous figures who are sometimes school superintendents. And I am so proud of the fact that we struggle as senators to defund the blind and do all these other major budgetary decisions to fund education. And the problem that actually some of our colleagues have talked about is part of it is how the formula is funded, which you have to have a formula. But the discussion we never really have that actually, I believe, former Speaker Hanaway attempted, we go and we do all these decisions that involve Medicaid or the blind or cutting higher education, not to fund education, And then you have all that other discussion about tax credits and all that. Okay, all of that. But you know what we never get to? I love a superintendent from a rural county walking into a committee hearing, and I've been here when this happens, who makes six figures and is the highest paid person
in
the
county.
Come and gripe
about
that
prevailing
a
wage.
Plumber makes $28.50 for a few hours' work.
Yeah.
And I've said, if you want to do away with fees, why don't we start dealing with superintendent's pay? And let's throw the other group in this setting, the other highly paid person in the region, the city administrator sometimes. So we make all these major decisions to, we got to fund education because we laudably think every dime's getting to that child. No, there is a lot of bureaucracies back home that stop that dollar, and we haven't ever really come up with a formula that's dealt with that. And I hope they get there. I hope they start dealing with all those layers of bureaucracy before we get to the kid that's going to school. And then we cite those same people who are part of those layers of bureaucracy, who make large salaries, who make six-figure salaries, and some of them absolutely deserve it. But let's just be real honest, when somebody comes up and they're making $150,000 a year or $135,000 a year in rural Missouri, and they come forward and they gripe about a plumber or a painter or an electrician, and they opine about their concerns for education. And one year, one of them did that, and I said, well, we could probably educate more kids if we cut your salary, too.
Hire more teachers.
So if you want to cut this, I agree with you, but let's cut school superintendent salaries, too.
That's a great point. One of my best friends, I won't name the school that he teaches at, but he gets frustrated as a teacher when he's got 12 principals in a school. How much sense does that make?
Well, all of these are very complicated things, and I get it that you
but
we can't micromanage,
but
I just hate the piety.
At the same
time,
they're meeting with teachers saying, we're going to have to let five of you go.
Right.
While 12 principals are at the meeting.
Right. But also, Senator, the other part of it is, we as state senators in a bipartisan way fight and make all these difficult decisions to fund those things. And then we find out that superintendent, and maybe they have a doctorate, and maybe they should make six figures, and we go through all of that, and we go through all of that to do those things. And then they come down here and gripe about what somebody else makes. But then keep in mind, it's also at some level our state tax money.
Right.
We have a formula. That school district is subsidized by us. So that money that isn't getting to the child, we're kind of paying that school superintendent's salary. And we're paying a lot of those layers of bureaucracy. And the senator from Cass.
Three senators on the floor. What purpose do you seek recognition, Senator? Proceed, Senator. Hearing no objection. Proceed. Proceed, Senators.
I think you could have gotten out anyway. He's going to go find a superintendent and tell him. Anyway, Mr. President, may I continue my inquiry? Senator.
Mr. President, can I inquire?
I have the floor.
Senator from Jefferson.
Is that going to be in the journal tomorrow?
Absolutely, Senator.
Thank you.
You don't
President, I was inquiring. Okay. So, you know, look, we can bring up layers of problems and problems that haven't been addressed and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But that's what, if that's our motivating factor here, if that's our contributing factor as to why we're doing this, if that's the prevailing factor in why we're doing this,
it's not much of a case.
Because, you know, I think a smart, back in my hometown, I mean, a smart superintendent of a school or a smart city manager actually wants their citizens to be part of the middle class, because if they know it costs them less, they typically are going to be a homeowner and a better taxpayer, and that's their position. And they know that their school district is better off if they have a whole bunch of those people compared to people.
I presented the bill today for the city of Peavey, and I had their city administrator there and the city administrator from Crystal City, where I live, and they asked what we were doing today, and I said, well, I guess I'll be on the floor trying to defeat changes to prevailing wage. They said, yeah, we don't want that bill to pass. I mean, we love the ability to pay our local contractors the right wage.
Well, what I would like to have happen in the process is only one group, and when I say group, one person has endorsed this changing the mode. Everybody else says, look, we may not agree you have a problem. Some of us maybe agree you have a problem. Whatever it is, the way you solve it is this. But they don't, but that's not even in this bill. The thing that all of the groups have talked about isn't even in the bill. Everything in the bill, no one's talked about. Now, what I wanted to get to was, I want you to go to page 2. And on the top of page 2, you may not have noticed this huge section that was bracketed out. You see that?
Top of page 2?
Well, the paragraph 5.
We have a Senate committee substitute.
Paragraph 5, Senator. Prevailing wages work out means wages paid generally and locality, and then you run into a bracket, right?
Gotcha.
Okay, what does that say? The workman engaged in work of a similar character, including basic hourly rate. Okay, move on down. What does it say? For medical, hospital care, pensions, retirement, or death, compensation for injuries, illness resulting from occupational activity, or insurance to provide any of the foregoing, unemployment benefits,
disability,
life insurance, disability, accident, sickness insurance. But just if anybody didn't notice, we're
apprenticeship programs.
We're in the center from Stoddard's bill. He's bracketing that whole section out. So when we're sitting here saying, well, this is about an area that's been through a natural disaster, and we're making a few other changes to maintenance, well, they left out that little part where they're kind of taking out that whole substance of the last 5 decades.
Right. The definition of prevailing wage, hourly wage weights goes from, I don't know, about 50 lines to 2 lines.
Right.
That would be substantive, I would think. I didn't notice that before, Senator. Those brackets were kind of...
Well, I was looking down when I first saw this in committee, and I thought, wow, this is a little bit more pervasive than adjusting for a waiver in a disaster area.
So they struck all that, and then that's where they basically stick that that OS, what do you call it, what you've been reading through.
Well, and then the new language becomes
the OES,
the median hourly wage, and then that's where they cite the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics by metropolitan and non-metropolitan area occupational employment wage estimate.
You know what I've noticed?
So
whatever
you saw
state
in that paragraph that dealt with people not being on Medicaid and people getting job training that we don't have to pay for, that's all gone, and now we're down to a really bad game of Family Feud.
No apprenticeship
survey
training
says.
Yeah.
All we need is Richard Dawson to show up with this occupational employment statistic, if you get that historical television reference.
No disability insurance, no accident
and say,
insurance.
Survey says. And by the way, the survey is based on salary and da-da-da-da-da-da-da and a median of all. Right. And so that's, and it, the survey itself, we don't know how detailed it is of our own state because we're dealing with the federal government. And it deals with all 50 states, Virgin Islands, and Guam. So that's what we're changing. That's what we're obliterating that paragraph and going to that. That's what's going to bring us back. That's what's going to bring an area that's been through a horrific, let's solve a problem. People who've been through a horrific disaster, I've got a solution. Let's pay them less. Let's pay them less. Let's not have any protections. By the way, while we're doing that, let's not even reward Missouri contractors. Senator, we haven't even gotten to that. Let's not even reward Missouri contractors. In the status quo, there's abuse. Let's do away with whatever protections there are so everybody from out of state, so every fly-by-night can come in here much easier than they do now. It's happening now. And I would liken all of these things, and somebody's going to stand up and say, well, he's wrong because, you know, it's happening now, and this abuse is happening now. We have speed limits on highways
now. But it was caught.
Senator, we have speed limits on highways. A speed limit doesn't stop speeding, but it allows you to provide, to place
some
controls.
But they have the ability to catch these violations.
Right, right. A speed limit itself.
Based on people reporting false numbers.
People still speed. People still break the law. But the reason you have a law is to try to allow some protection or fairness or balance or something. And you're doing away with all that. You're doing away with all that. Now, so I didn't know if we really had the senator from 13 hadn't
question.
Discussed that, but
is that the occupational employment statistics, which is spelled out in the bill, is that used anywhere else? Do you know? Do you even know? I don't believe it is, but
I don't know how scientific it is. I will tell you.
I mean, did it come from another state?
Don Stahlhuber, and he can get you a copy of this. I asked him to do something looking at it since we were about to make it law. And I thought it was maybe a good idea to find out whether it made sense before we made it law.
Yeah,
but
I was
he can get you a copy of this. I had him do a memo.
Another state.
What's that?
I guess my question is, has this been used in another state?
Well, you'll see from the memo he put together that I just had him put together looking at this, and I'm sure he emulated the web search that maybe the proponents did to come to this gym.
Put in Google?
Yes. Badidea.com. Help non-MissouriContractors.com. I don't know what he loaded in the Google search, but this is what came out. And I'm just saying, okay, where is this stuff? Okay? Is this something? Is there a case to make this the basis for wages? And that's my only point. If we want to deal with problems of wages, let's make sure that this is right.
Their own report says response rates are increasingly a source of concern.
I read that earlier.
It's become difficult to achieve and maintain high response rates. So if
the report first, say
68% of the counties are having a hard time reporting on a system that's easy to report.
Senator,
how is this going to make it easy?
Senator, this wage survey is 50 states, Guam, and the Virgin Islands. So when they say that,
they're not
just referring to Missouri. There, in theory, could be counties that don't even report from Missouri in this survey.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll go to the next sentence. The report further asserts that there is considerable variation by state, industry, establishment, size. The study also demonstrated up to 30 percentage point difference regarding response rates in establishments. In some states, such as Oklahoma, North Carolina, South Carolina, responding to occupational employment statistics survey, mandatory, thereby skewing the data in a manner that is reflective of wages. Imagine that. Even North Carolina, Oklahoma, and South Carolina recognize mandatory reporting. Wow. They're ahead of us. The study also demonstrated that the larger the metropolitan statistical area, the harder it is to collect data. As establishments in larger statistical areas. I heard the senator from Pro Tem say North Carolina, he's absolutely right, by the way, those three states don't have prevailing wage, but they're going to be part of our wage survey. So you're going to have data that maybe is overreported from there and not reported from Kansas City, St. Louis, or some major metropolitan area, which, by the way, in this memo, you'll find that didn't do it. Look, here's my point. if we want to talk about how to get to a fair way wages, we've had the contractor say mandatory reporting. I don't know of anybody who said this is a good idea. And I didn't even know much about it. I saw this reported, and, you know, you're always intimidated by these federal titled things like, oh, the office of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so I so then I just had our staff look it up and go, what is this thing? What do they do? How thorough are they? I mean, before we turn our wages and, you know, repeal five decades of the middle class, might be a good idea for us to check that out.
Well, that's why I go back to over 10 years. We've had 12 objections ruled upon. That's it.
If there is some perception, here's my point. If there is some perception that, you know, what's, I have heard from my colleagues, there's a perception that and the center from Stoddard this morning, that the Department of Labor, da-da-da-da-da, leans this way. I will just tell you, Senator, that's not new. Under Governor Blunt, I had a feeling, whether right or not, but a perception that the Department of Labor was not an advocate for labor at all. Okay, that is, as I mentioned, part of sometimes the political ties. The remedy for that is to put in law what the department must do and blah, 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 blah. And that's what our contractors have said at all of these meetings. And why we're totally rejecting everything they've suggested and just doing this instead of something that none of them mentioned, that most of them said would be a terrible idea, as they said an average would be. What are you averaging? Are you averaging among what electricians make? Are you throwing in the person who makes the school with the person who does my neighbor's house that was paid $10 an hour? Is that an equal thing? So that's, you know.
It's an arbitrary number.
Right.
And you're not comparing, like we've said, apples to apples. That's why, I mean, to me, the mode method seems to be the method that, well, quite frankly, I think almost all the states are using the mode method, so.
Can I get some water?
They all, you know, maybe we ought to listen to them if most states are using this method. Some states are only using the collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
Now, some states allow the commissioners with the Division of Labor, in years that they feel like the wage rate isn't reflective of the area, have the ability to lower it by 6% or raise it by 6%. I mean, there's other things we can do than to change the definition to go to a wage statistic that, as you have mentioned over and over, I think would be harder. Less people will get these wage numbers correct.
Well,
you know, and you're not comparing the same type of work.
It always amazes me, Senator, that we with one hand do something and with the other hand we undo it. And we had a discussion, and I'm trying to remember, I believe you were in the legislature, about undocumented workers.
Right.
That was under Governor Blunt. That was a major priority.
That's actually where the OSHA 10 bill was attached to.
I will just tell you, laudably, I thought Governor Blunt tried to do a very good job. I felt the legislature tried to act in a bipartisan way.
Senator from the second.
I thought he did an exceptional job. Very difficult issue.
Difficult right.
issue for a state to grapple. Quite frankly, lack of leadership by both parties nationally, it actually is more appropriate to be dealt with nationally, but we haven't had that, and that's both parties' fault over the last decade.
Right.
But the reality is, we have to, okay, so there we are, I think that was 2007, I'm just making a guess, maybe six, maybe even five, but it was one, I don't know if you were in the, I don't know if you were over here or still in the House.
2006.
Okay, so with one hand, we're saying, look, we've got to do something, and we grappled with all of those issues about a business willingly, knowingly, all of those complicated issues. All of those complicated issues.
E-verify.
E-verify and all that. And we did to the extent what we could with the state. You can't, You can't, you know, do that. I mean, what I mean is we go and put all these things in law, and then we do something like this, which makes it easier for somebody to hire undocumented workers, makes it easier for people to cheat, people don't have to report. If there is a problem in this, we have an opportunity to actually make the construction industry in Missouri better for union and non-union, and maybe make sure that everybody pays their taxes, that pays their workers' comp. At the same moment we're dealing with this, we're dealing with the second injury fund, right. We're dealing with workers' comp, we're dealing with all these issues that are because of the recession and other reasons, and because businesses haven't paid, or because the legislature in 2005 set a cap at 3%, despite everybody's warning, and now they on their own have come forward with this great epiphany and said they need to raise it. Whatever the issue is, here's the problem. So 2 days ago, we're dealing with the second injury fund, and we're dealing with all these other things, and part of the problem is, and today we're dealing with this, and one of the consequences of this is it'll be easier for contractors and people to cheat.
Right.
And not pay workers' comp and not pay those things. And I would like, in this process, to somehow get to making this system fair, transparent, equitable, but I also, as part of that even playing field, want to have basic duties and obligations to contractors before they get our tax money. And I would include our tax money on tax credits. Because this makes me mad when I see all this stuff about tax credits. These people with tax credits are told, they come down and tell us, oh, how many times have you heard, Senator, oh, historic low income, this tax credit creates jobs. And then you see this stuff. And I heard members of the majority over there laughing it off like, oh, this is just photo, oh, let's just ignore this. Well, if you want to do that, go ahead. But don't come to me and gripe about things, because this is what's happening, and you should be mad about it. And if you don't do it here, you'd better do it when you grapple with tax credits of what's happening with your tax dollars, because this should make you as mad as any 240, yeah, they're building the $240,000 apartment. Guess what? They're not even hiring Missourians to do it. That should make you mad.
It makes me mad.
They're hurting your own second injury fund and your own workers' comp fund and your own tax base and your own school district and your own city because they're not paying taxes. And guess what? With the other hand, we're trying to do a bill that goes to, let's do an average wage. Let's do away with all this requirement of this. Let's obliterate this. Let's waive that. Let's not make anybody report any wages. Let's do this instead. What are we doing? Why don't we clean up a section of the table and then with our other hand dump some garbage on it the next day? And that's what's happening.
And
everybody can, I heard them. They were all laughing at, this is just da-da-da-da-da. I thought this was compelling enough. I've never shared it with my colleagues. And I've heard all this discussion about tax credits, and I agree with part of it, but I also wanted to always get to this part, too. Hey, you're talking about employment and all these sorts of things? Guess what? There aren't a lot of requirements on these tax credits sometimes. And people hire subcontractors, and guess what? A lot of them aren't citizens.
Well,
and part of the reason it's easier is because you don't require them to pay prevailing wage. You don't require them to pay a living wage. You don't require them to pay taxes. You don't require them to do that.
This makes me mad, and it makes me sad. I mean, to think that people are living like this.
That's a construction. Look, they did surveillance photos of construction sites. Some of them involve tax credits in Kansas City, Missouri. I will just tell you this was presented to the City Council of Kansas City. Some of it's been turned over to whatever. Some of it's very difficult to prosecute.
Yeah.
But you know what I have tried to tell people in this industry? I've heard about undocumented workers, and I've heard about all this stuff. You know what you should do? Go document it. So your elected officials can see it and say, stop. Stop. They'll get up and say, that has nothing to do with prevailing wage. That has nothing to do with this. Well, you know, when we're obliterating whole sections of health care and paying taxes, that has nothing to do with this.
Well, yeah, it does. Sure it does.
And if you're not going to deal with it in this bill, and you're not going to make contractors, even though the entire industry has told you to do this, you want to fix prevailing wage tomorrow morning, make everybody report, and arm your school districts and your cities and your municipalities and your counties with the ability to say, yeah, I don't have to go with the lowest and best bidder, and I can determine whether this contractor was in business last year. And they don't get burned like the people who just went through a horrific tornado. I think everybody who's making arguments about, you know, Joplin and let's deal with it. That's why we've had meetings with contractors. Sadly, Senate Bill 439 has nothing from any of those meetings.
I don't even think we talked about this bill in the meetings. I don't think we had the bill
out. One contractor said, I don't like the mode method.
Yeah.
I don't remember anybody saying the Bureau of blah, 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 blah. I didn't know. Why don't we change the name to make it popular with the other party? Instead of calling it Occupational Employment Statistics, why don't we call it the Obama Employment Statistics Department? That's what I'll rename it in the bill so they can put it in there that the pro tem has passed a bill that quotes the Obama Employment Statistics Bureau. This is, maybe this is brilliant. I don't know, but, you know, our staff in a half hour does an internet search and finds, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea to use this as the basis for wages in the construction industry in Missouri. And by the way, yeah, the senator from 11th, he's just a politician and he's saying that, but golly gee, there's a group of contractors that do this every day that also thinks it's a bad idea. Maybe we ought to listen to them since they have to do all this. So anyway, Senator, I want to try to effectively bring this debate to a solution. And I want the body who might be getting frustrated about, hey, we're tired of him speaking. I can already see the senator from Polk frustrated and upset. But, no, I'm just, look, I want to get to a solution, and I want to make it all work.
I don't want to keep sitting there at those meetings and pretend that I'm trying to find some type of solution.
I'm
sincere
not.
About it. But eliminating the mode method isn't a way to do that for me. Not going to an average medium wage is not a way to do that for me.
Well,
to somehow find a way to have these wages actually reflect the work that is being done comparable to other trades in that area. We've somehow got to figure out a way to get 68% of the counties to report. And I don't think by going with occupational employment statistics is a way to do that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not reflected.
I understand my colleague's frustration, and my solution to that is to try to be reasonable and say, we're just, let's be real honest, we're just a bunch of dumb politicians. Let's not sit here and make decisions about the construction industry. I'd love to appoint myself a philosopher king, but I'm not. So I bring in people from the industry, and here's what they say. Now, sadly, only one of them has even brought up some of the things that are in 439. Now, I know from this former senator from Franklin, John Gresheimer, who I had a great deal of respect, who you did as well, that he had the miraculous ability, and I believe Mike Gibbons used to refer to him as Henry Clay, and I would hear him back there and he'd go, I need a Henry Clay solution, because John Gresheimer would have a miraculous ability to bring the cable industry and telecommunications and everybody into a room and say, and you'd go, there's no way he's going to get them to agree. And about April 19th, they would emerge from some round room and he would say, I have a bill that everybody pretty much agrees with. And I was hoping in this process, in deference to my colleagues who come from a different perspective, I'm still interested in that. What's in front of them now is no product of that. And it's no product of the meetings that we've been having. Now, people and the senator from Stoddard can change his bill. I'm not bashing him right now. I assume we're not making it law right now. I'm talking about a process, and I could have shown up at these meetings and said, no, I'm going to filibuster prevailing wage, and there aren't going to be any changes, and blah, 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 and all that. And I could have done this, and Senator, this is my last year. This is my last year.
He gave me interesting update.
An interesting man.
The jumping jack is now the official state exercise. The House just passed that.
What's that?
The jumping jack is now the official state exercise.
Did they get that done? That's good.
Important stuff.
I'm happy we didn't have to come back in special session to determine that. How does the senator from Lawrence feel about that? But,
well, and I just want to say,
no,
earlier
and,
this
and
morning,
I want,
the,
and
the
you're built like me, and I just
discussion that the senator from the 13th and the senator from Stoddard had, I appreciate it because they were both very respectful to each other. That's the way this body should operate.
Right.
In the end, they don't agree on at least this piece of legislation. They agree on right to work. But like you, you know, maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think this bill that we have before us.
Let's talk about the light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay.
I go back to what, ad nauseum, what I try to bring up
in
this
meetings.
Chamber that you brought up.
Yeah.
And I'll just say it one more time so I can say it again. I try
it's
to tell people, show me the pathway
to this
becoming
law.
If this is just bad kabuki theater and political tag with the governor, and you really think that a Democratic governor is going to be traumatized at vetoing a bad bill involving prevailing wage.
That has the biggest contractors in the state.
And has the biggest contractor organization saying, this is a bad idea, it's terrible to emulate Guam and the Virgin Islands. And all
Puerto
of that.
Rico.
And by the way,
leaving
again,
out Puerto Rico.
Senator, that assumes it gets out of the House.
Right.
Assume all that happens, okay? Show me where something like this happens. Now, if you reach a balance like a John Griesheimer, that makes sense to where the industry says, look, you know, this wasn't a big pressing issue with us, but you heard what my contractor, who is a member of the Republican Party,
right,
you know, came down here with and said, and he's the one among others that said, look, you want to solve this? And his point was, this is my ninth year of coming down here.
Right.
I'm trying to run a business. I'm trying to build things, trying to run electricity. I you know, another, the senator from 13th brought up, one of the other contractors said, why are we being punished because we have pensions and health care for our employees? I thought that was a laudable goal of the state. I mean, I'm not going to come down here and apologize that we don't let our employees die of starvation on Social Security when they're done.
Well, that's what made me sad about those pictures you showed me. Not just because they could have been undocumented workers or whatever, the living arrangements that they were in. They weren't even paid a living wage. They're not going to be able to go out and spur the economy by spending the money that they would get if they followed the rules. You know, there was a study from a professor from the University of Wisconsin that talked about the middle class and why the middle class is so important, and that's the driver in our economy. And he said the top, I think it was the top 2%, they have the buying power of 440,000 Americans. And his example was that 1 or 2%, they're going to go buy 4 cars. They may buy 10 cars, and they're going to be the nicest cars you've ever seen. But they're going to stop there, right?
Right.
You put that buying power into the middle class, they're each going to buy 1 or 2 cars. And what's that going to do to the auto industry?
Senator,
I mean,
forget about that for a second. The senator from 13th, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, I mean, I don't want to be mean, but don't tell me about the power of the middle class. Look at the middle class in Missouri. The constituents of the senator from 24th, constituents of the senator from 15th, constituents of the senator from 13th, from my district, from the senator from the 10th.
Right.
I mean, we're paying for a lot of stuff, and the senator from 13th isn't mean, but what's talking about this state, part of being a citizen of the state of Missouri is, We're donor states in education, in a sheriff's department, in a whole bunch of things.
I mean donor counties.
And part of that problem is, it's not a problem, we have a lot of middle-class families and we're able to afford to do that.
Right.
And you go to other sections of the state where they don't have a base. And now we want to come in with a bill because occasionally one of them might make $28 an hour on a building that lasts, constructing it, 8 months.
I don't want to give the lobby community any insight on how I vote up here, but the senator from the 13th told me a long time ago. He's so old, he actually served with me and my dad, and he had dark hair back then. But he told me a long time ago, when I went to him on an issue that I could see both sides, and they both had valid points, and he said, it's simple. He goes, all I do is I look at which company pays their employees better, and I vote with them.
Right.
And that's what I've been doing, at least for my time in the Senate. And to me, that does nothing but help the middle class, does nothing but help our state with people paying their income taxes, going out and buying things and increasing the sales tax. We talk about our state being, 49th in the country in higher education funding. We're cutting, there's an attempt to cut cuts to the blind. We can't fund education. And the answer to that is we're going to try to lower wages and the buying power of the people that actually generate the general revenue funds in our state and the income taxes in our state. That seems backwards to me.
I'm going to go home to Independence and say, I did a great job for you. You now make $22 an hour instead of $28. What? Am I insane? They throw rotten tomatoes at me. They normally do that, but I don't want them to cause them to do that. Senator, I appreciate the inquiry. I have an amendment, and I'm going to end my inquiry and offer this amendment to the senator from 13th.
Substitute amendment.
And then if you want to continue or whatever, I'm going to probably talk to him a little bit. But that I want to get to this, and I want to just say the substitute amendment is my attempt to try.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Stoddard.
Mr. President, would you lay this bill over on the informal calendar?
It will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business.
Do we have messages from the House?
Let's first see if there are messages from the House.
Are
if there are, would you please have this
read? There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 1264, an act relating to motor vehicle registration periods. Also, House Bill 1267, an act relating to foster children. Also, House Bill 1315, an act relating to state employee leave for members of the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1325, an act to authorize the conveyance of property owned by the state in Pettis County to the city of Sedalia. Also, House Bill 1345, an act relating to publication of the state manual. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1363, an act relating to exhibition of livestock at fairs and expositions. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1407, an act relating to a sickle cell standing committee. Also, House Bill 1408, an act relating to the designation of Organ Donor Recognition Day. Also, House Bill 1063, an act relating to the designation of the official state exercise. Also, House Bill 1460, an act relating to the statewide court automation fund. Also, House Bill 1424, an act relating to the state highway patrol. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1462, an act relating to the Missouri Qualified Biodiesel Producer Incentive Fund. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1477, an act relating to the Missouri Grain Dealer Law. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bills 1518 and 1522, an act relating to the licensure of behavior analysts. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1563, an act relating to Legend Drugs. Also, House Bill 1545, an act relating to the designation of PKS Day. Also, House Bill 1615, an act relating to actions for money damages for conduct or speech at public hearings or meetings. Also, House Bill 1820, an act to authorize the conveyance of property owned by the state to the State Highways and Transportation Commission. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1623, an act relating to members of economic development tax boards. Also, House Bill 1630, an act relating to the Highways and Transportation Commission. Also, House Bill 1636, an act relating to the election of courts to hear violations of municipal ordinances. Also, House Bill 1651, an act relating to the designation of Spinal Cord Injury Month in Missouri. Also, House Bill 1652, an act relating to the designation of Fibromyalgia Month in Missouri, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
We're on the order of business of reports of standing committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolution, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 877, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 811 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 665 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 599 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 595 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Bill 482 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
We're on the order of business of announcements. Announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion of the Senator from the 23rd. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate will stand adjourned. The motion carried. The Senate will stand adjourned according to the rules.